This is from a somewhat recent article that I tracked down online, posted by the National Institute of Health. It says this: paying attention to what's going on right this second can be hard. We often spend more time thinking about what's coming up in the future or dwelling on things in the past that we can't change. As a result, we can miss out on experiencing the present. But it's possible to train yourself to focus on the present moment so that you become aware of what's going on inside and around you, your thoughts, feelings, sensations, and environment. You observe these moments without judgment. This is called mindfulness. Have you guys heard that word? It's one of those trending words, right, over the last like 10 years. Mindfulness. In recent years, mindfulness has become a household term. Mindfulness programs are now commonly found in schools, workplaces, and hospitals. And studies suggest that focusing on the present can have positive impact on health and well-being. Mindfulness-based treatments have been shown to reduce anxiety and depression. There's also evidence that mindfulness can lower blood pressure and improve sleep. It may even help people cope with pain. So that article had many other things. It wasn't that long, but had many other things to say about mindfulness, that practice, especially its benefits. But as positive and as helpful as that kind of practice can be, it simply is not the mindfulness that matters most. That distinction belongs to the mindfulness mentioned in Psalm 8. Psalm 8. Why don't we turn there this morning? There's some hardcover Bibles in the back. If you want to grab one of those, you can use that. If you've got a Bible app on your phone or you brought your own Bible this morning, please scroll over or open up to Psalm 8. Psalm 8 is a song of David. We don't know exactly when he wrote this song, but as we will see, it very well could have been inspired by, who knows, many nights out in the field as a younger man shepherding his family's flock. Our focus this morning will be on verses 3 and 4. But notice that the first and final verses of this short psalm, Psalm 8, that's verses 1 and 9. If you take a look at those, do you notice anything interesting about those verses? What's that? They're identical. Yeah, they're exactly the same statement there. They are the same praise. O Yahweh, our Lord, how majestic is your name in all the earth. The psalm starts there. The psalm finishes there. Verses 1 and 9. So if David's praise here about the majesty of God serves as like brackets, bookends for this whole song, then what can we expect to find between these two verses, in verses 2 through 8? Well, we should expect to find an earthwide, a globally relevant reason that the songwriter is worshiping God in this song. Let's look for that as we go through. So let's consider this by beginning in our main text. It's Psalm 8, verses 3 and 4 is where we're focusing in on this morning. This is what we read in Psalm 8, verses 3 and 4. When I look at your heavens, the work of your fingers, the moon and the stars which you have set in place, what is man that you are mindful of him? What is the Son of Man that you care for him? Okay, let's stop there. Remember what I said about David sitting out in that field, maybe many, many, many nights, staring up at the night sky. There are really so many things in creation that could and should inspire praise to our Creator. If I just mention creation and worship, I bet you're thinking of a whole bunch of things right now, right? There's a lot of images coming to your mind. Maybe you've got some posted on your wall, some incredible scene from nature. Maybe you've got a screensaver on your laptop or your tablet or your phone that has some beautiful, incredible shot of creation. But if you've ever camped out under the stars, if you've ever been out there far away from the lights of the city, then you know that unlike an alpine vista or rolling hills of green or an amazing desert canyon or a tropical seascape, there is nothing that can make a human being feel quite as small as a canopy of thousands and thousands of stars set against the darkness of the night sky. Take a look at a picture here that we've got on the screen for you. It's just a little reminder of just how big it is, right? How big it is. Maybe you've been out there. Maybe that stirs up some memories in your heart, your mind. Of course, there are anywhere from 5,000 to 10,000 stars visible on the clearest of nights to the naked eye. That's about how many you can see. Somewhere between 5 and 10,000 stars. We know, of course, there are actually anywhere from 100 to 400 billion stars in our galaxy alone. And it's possible in terms of the number of galaxies in our universe that there are as many as 2 trillion. Galaxies. Now add to this the moon with the light that it reflects, its size when nearest to the horizon, the colors that it can pick up from the particulates in the atmosphere, and you, every single night, have a gift from the Creator, your Maker. You have a gift that will humble you if you step outside and look up. It's there, free of charge, given by the grace of God to each of us. And this is where David is camped out, right? Figuratively camped out, thinking about this very idea. He is responding here. The immensity and the beauty and the wonder of the night sky has driven the psalmist here to ask, if our God has created and upholds and reveals His greatness through something so staggering and so stunning as the moon and all the stars, why in the world would He give thought to creatures as tiny and helpless as we are? This is like us making so much of ants, gnats. This is like us celebrating and fixating and making so much of microscopic protozoa. This is the same concept. We're staggered. We're blown away by this idea. But did you notice the word we began with in verse 4? What is man that you are mindful of him? You see, that's a category, the mindfulness of God. The mindfulness of God. What is man that you are mindful of him? This is a fairly common word in the Hebrew Bible. In most cases, though, where you find this word, zakar, it means to remember. You see, the root of it is something like to call to mind, right? To think about, to come to your thoughts, to give thought to. And the second part of verse 4 presents that parallel. It's kind of like what's called synonymous parallelism. It kind of is the same, saying the same thing, maybe a little bit extra, kind of fleshing it out, filling it out a little bit. So that second part of verse 4 is enhancing this with this idea that you care for Him. You're mindful. God is mindful of us, but He also cares for us. Or that's how we talk about His mindfulness to us. He doesn't just give thought to us as, oh yeah, there's human beings down there too. You know, I'm seeing the cheetahs, I'm seeing the saguaro cactus, I'm seeing the cumulonimbus clouds, I'm seeing these things. Oh yeah, and there's, I give thought and take, you know, remember the human beings too. No, he cares. He's mindful in the sense that he cares. He remembers us with compassion, with mercy, with thought. Now think about this. Think about what's being said in these two verses. The same God who ordered the night sky, whose glory is reflected in the glory of the moon and the stars, is the same God who is mindful of us, who cares for us. The deists, people like Ben Franklin and many of our founding fathers, those deists, they got it all wrong. They were amazed at God who ran the universe, and they were willing to subscribe to that, but they couldn't see that within the running of the universe and the power displayed in all creation and its care and operation, they couldn't see that that same power is directed towards us. That he cares for us. He has set us in place as human beings. And there's something even distinct about this. Think about this. And science only fills out our picture of these issues. Think about this. The God who is perfectly mindful of every single time two hydrogen nuclei collide at extremely high speeds, overcoming the electrostatic repulsion and fuse together to form a helium nucleus, releasing energy in the process, the very process that powers every single star, the very process that occurs billions of times per second inside of a star. That God who is mindful of every instance that happens is perfectly mindful of you. Of you. Of everything about you. Of your heart. Of your hurts. Wow. Wow. Is that as stunning to you as it was to David? Dude, David wrote a whole song on this. Like, that's how inspired he was. He was moved to write a song about this idea. How is God moving you through this idea? Does it inspire praise and worship in your heart even now? Okay, Pastor Bryce, teacher hat on. I'm assigning you homework. Tonight when the sun goes down, go out in your backyard. Grab a chair from inside, grab a chair from outside, sit out, and I know you're in the city, I know the view is not quite the same, but look up into the night sky. Like David, look to the heavens and sit and reflect and think about what God is showing you there. The moon is a waning crescent tonight. I think it's like luminosity is like 34%. It's not super bright. But it should be beautiful, right? Even when it's a crescent, you get that sense of it's spherical, like that roundness of the moon, that it's like that just out there, hanging, reflecting the light of the sun. It's amazing. So stand in awe tonight as you look up. Do that. Ask God to help you feel your smallness in the face of such an awesome aspect of creation, like the night sky. But if we go back to David's questions inspired by the night sky, one of the questions we should ask is, what does it mean that God is mindful of us? What does it mean that he cares for us? Well, as was the case with me, maybe some of you are thinking of verses, there are verses coming into your mind about God's care for the world. Let me share a couple of them that the Apostle Paul saw fit to bring out when he was talking to non-Jewish listeners. This is what Paul, how he spoke to his culture, people who did not believe, who were not Jewish. This is what he spoke to them about. He said this, take a look at these verses. In past generations, this living God allowed all the nations to walk in their own ways, yet he did not leave himself without witness, for he did good by what? He was mindful of you and cared for you. How? By giving you rains from heaven and fruitful seasons, right? The harvest. Satisfying your hearts with food and gladness. Ever had a good meal with friends? Ever laughed around the table? Ever had a successful year at work? Ever had any of those kinds of things? Guess what? Thank God for that, because he's the reason you experience that. He's the reason you experience that. He gave you rain from heaven, fruitful season, satisfying your heart with food and gladness. Acts 14:16-17. Paul went on with the Athenians and said, the God who made the world and everything in it, being Lord of heaven and earth, does not live in temples made by man, like your temples here in Athens. No, he's not served by human hands as though he needed anything, since he himself gives. Mindful, he cares for you. He gives to all mankind life and breath and everything. That kind of covers, that just covers. That's the catch-all category right there. Everything comes from the good hand of God, the gracious hand of God. Acts 17:24-25. God's mindfulness of mankind, his care for human beings, is evident every single day, in every corner of the world, in innumerable blessings that we do not deserve. Do you agree with that? Yeah? That God's kind, his care for mankind, his mindfulness of mankind, is evident every single day in every corner of the world in innumerable blessings that we simply do not deserve. And we'll talk about that more in a minute. Even apart from the spiritual benefits that you enjoy, if you're sitting here this morning, you only sit here this morning, and this is applicable to every single one of us, you only sit here this morning because God has kept you and blessed you into this point in time and space. Now, you may not be happy about your life right now, where it's at. You may be struggling this morning. But as long as you breathe, there's hope. Because there is a God in heaven who has kept you and blessed you into this moment. It's the reason you're here. You see, friends, I just want to sensitize my heart and your heart evermore to the things that we take for granted every single day. And shame on us for taking them for granted. No, seriously, shame on us. We know what God deserves. We know the thanksgiving that God deserves. The gratitude from us for such bounty, for such goodness that we enjoy. Even in hard times, there's always something to be thankful for. This is true for everyone, even for those who will. Like I said, every corner of the world, every person. This is true for every single person, even for those who will never, ever, at any point in their lives, acknowledge such amazing and divine grace. It's true for them still. But guess what? If you think now, as you hear some of this, if you think now that the benefits of this divine mindfulness are impressive, more impressive than today's therapeutic practice of personal mindfulness. And there are benefits to that, but these benefits, wow, divine mindfulness, wow. If you think that's impressive, we've talked about now, then I want you to see what David has in mind here. In fact, what he's talking about is even bigger than we've been talking about. How do I know that? Because the context helps us. If we keep going past verses 3 and 4, take a look at your Bible. Keep going past verses 3 and 4, verses 5 through 8. Look at where he goes here. What does David tell us about mankind? Remember, David's writing in light of the expansiveness of the heavens and the teeny tininess of humanity. So even though we might seem to be, in that comparison, insignificant in the grand scheme of things, look at what he goes on to tell us beginning in verse 5. Yet, with the immensity in view, yet you have made him human being. You have made us a little lower than the heavenly beings, that is, the angels. And crowned him. You've crowned us, God, with glory and honor. You have given him, them, dominion over the works of your hands. You have put all things under his feet, all sheep and oxen, and also beasts of the field, the birds of the heavens, and the fish of the sea. Whatever passes along the paths of the sea, it's all under man's dominion. The one crowned with glory and honor by the Maker of all things. We're not only the beneficiaries of creation, but by God's grace, we are the vice regents of creation. Do you know that about yourself? That if you bear the image of God, and if you're a living, breathing human being this morning, check that box. You do bear the image of God. Do you know what it means in the context of Genesis 1 when it says that God made us in his image? In the context, the first thing that hits you right between the eyes, really the only explicit thing that passage says about you being made in the image of God, is that God has given you dominion. Just as God has ultimate dominion over the whole universe, he has given mankind dominion, a kind of stewardship to rule with him over the world. That's how we were made. Though the night sky has a truly impressive kind of glory, as we saw from that picture, as we know from experience, it has not been crowned like with glory like we have. God wants you to accept in faith. He wants you to accept in faith that the glory you're crowned with as a human being is greater than that of the night sky that you see above you. We have that. And beyond that, we in fact have been crowned, verse 5, with glory and honor. Glory and honor. God has put all things under our feet. Right? We dam rivers, we build crops, we build buildings, we dig, we can steward. We don't always do a great job, but we're kind of really stinking at it right now, but we have incredible capabilities given to us by God. We use animals, we are companions with animals, we eat animals, we do all of these things. We have this position where we benefit from creation, but God has put us there. Divinely appointed stewards of the earth. And so in light of the bigness of the heavens and in comparison, the smallness of human beings on our tiny planet, in our tiny corner of the universe, in light of all of this, the bigness of our blessing, of our position, of God's care and compassion and generosity to us is simply remarkable. I'm just trying to tell you what David told you in about 26 different ways. Just trying to come at it from so many different ways that you go like, oh, I get it. I get it, Pastor Bryce. I get it. I get how big it is. I get it. It's huge. And in the context, it's even bigger. Truly, every human being on this planet, if they could really see this, if they could really understand this, if they could really appreciate it, they would rightly cry out, what? Oh, Yahweh, our Lord. How majestic is your name in all the earth. Ah, now you see why those are bracketing. Right? First and last verse. Whoa, this is huge. But even though God gave humanity dominion over the planet in Genesis chapter 1, we also know the devastating truth that Genesis chapter 3 altered that relationship. Claiming to be wise, we despised our crowns as vice regents and we sought gods instead. Horrifying, isn't it? The crowns we had been given weren't good enough. We wanted the one on God's head instead. Every single human being is a rebel, is a coup plotter in that same way. Because of our doubt and our defiance, because of our sin, we have become, in fact, a cancer on the very same creation which we were appointed over. We have become a cancer, a blight, as the Apostle Paul described in Romans chapter 8, verses 20 through 22. Take a look. The creation itself was subjected to futility because of our sin. It suffers in bondage to corruption because of our sin. In fact, the whole creation has been groaning together in the pains of childbirth until now because of our sin. You see, we were created in a kind of symbiotic relationship with this creation. And as we have sunk ourselves into sin, creation has suffered as a result. It wasn't meant to be that way. Creation suffers as a result. And so we know that the blessing of mindfulness and care that David describes here is just one part of what is true about humanity. Is what David said still true? It is still true. And David he's like the glass half full guy on this day when he's writing this psalm, right? He's just in that kind of like rainbows and unicorns mindset where he's seeing all these really nice positive things. And it's good. We have to do that. But I could share with you 10 or 15 Psalms of David where he will tell you the absolute worst about human beings. He will reveal not the majesty of humanity, but the ugliness, our ugliness under sin. And we need to think about this. Though we still experience many of these blessings of dominion, of being crowned with glory and honor, we have so seriously distorted our mandate and our privilege, and all creation suffers as a result. So we think, what can be done? Right? What hope is there? What can be done? And I'm not talking about climate crisis right now, right? Some may hear like, oh, you're talking about climate crisis because there's all this media and so many things talking about this and pointing to that, the collapse of all of this stuff. And we need to take that seriously. Don't be so dismissive of all of that, right? Don't be dismissive of that. We have a responsibility with this planet. We need to take care of it and not act foolishly. And if you don't think in our sin that we're hurting the planet, you don't understand sin. You don't understand what sin is and what it does. It taints and destroys everything around it. Of course we can do that, just like we corrupt our own hearts. That doesn't mean we believe every single thing we hear in every doomsday apocalypse scenario, but we're open and we're reasonable, like wisdom from heaven, as James described it. We have been given a privileged position. We need to take that seriously. But that's not what I'm talking about. I'm not talking about just ecological crisis or disaster. That's not what's being talked about here in Romans chapter 8. There is a fullness to the creation that God made it for. It's connected to us. It's bigger and more beautiful than you could ever imagine. It is waiting for the redemption of the sons of God, Paul writes. That's you and me. So when we understand what has happened to us and what happens to the world as a result and the glory that we've lost, what can be done? What hope is there? Turn over, if you would, to Hebrews 2. Because that's where we're going to find the answer to this. Hebrews chapter 2. Hebrews chapter 2. So in Hebrews chapter 2 in the New Testament, close to the end, in arguing for the Son of God's superiority over the angels, as he does in chapters 1 and chapter 2, listen to how the author of Hebrews, this is Hebrews 2 verses 5 through 9, listen to how he makes his case from the Psalms. He writes, "For it was not to the angels that God subjected the world to come." Keep that in mind, the world to come. It's not to angels that God subjected the world to come, of which we are speaking. It has been testified somewhere. Guess what? We know where that is, don't we? We know it's Psalm 8. What's been testified? This: "What is man that you are mindful of him, or the son of man that you care for him? You made him for a little while." Interesting translational difference from the Old Testament, which was you made him a little lower than the heavenly beings. Here it's a little while. It's understood as a time reference. "You made him a little while lower than the angels. You have crowned him with glory and honor, putting everything in subjection under his feet." Those are familiar words to us. We just saw them in Psalm 8. The writer of Hebrews goes on, "Now in putting everything in subjection to him, he left nothing outside his control. At present, we do not yet see everything in subjection to him, but we do see him who for a little while was made lower than the angels." Wait a minute, I thought we were talking about mankind here. Who are we talking about? Namely, Jesus. Crowned with glory and honor. That sounds familiar, doesn't it? Crowned with glory and honor because of the suffering of death, so that by the grace of God, he might taste death for everyone. Do you see what he's saying here? Do you see what he's saying? Isn't this amazing? Brothers and sisters, what was tarnished and tainted in us will be restored in Jesus Christ. He is the human being. He is the Son of Man who will finally fulfill the mandate and the blessing of dominion. All because of him. All through him. He is the one who will bring Psalm 8 to its fullness when one day we see all creation put under his feet, subjected to him. Wow. Think about this. If you recognize the 10,000 reasons you have to be thankful this week, just in light of Psalm 8, just studying Psalm 8, then what happens when you add Jesus to that calculation? 10,000 times 10,000 times 10,000 times 10,000, right? And you could keep going. The very one through whom the heavens, the moon, and the stars were made in all their overwhelming immensity, he became for us like us in our tininess. Whoa. Psalm 8. Verses 3 and 4, both verses. What is man that you are, or when I consider the works of your heavens, your fingers, the moon and the stars that you have set in place, verse 3. What is man that you are mindful of him, the son of man that you care for him. Both those verses are fulfilled and filled to overflowing in the same person, Jesus. Is that awesome? Both sides of that relationship are fulfilled in Jesus. And guess what? He was the son of the writer of Psalm 8. He was the son of the writer of Psalm 8, wasn't he? He was the son of David. Yeah, great, 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 great grandson, right? You know what it is. This is stunning. And so, brothers and sisters, friends, if modern mindfulness helps us with things like anxiety and depression and blood pressure and sleeplessness, even helping people cope with pain, how much more the mindfulness that matters most. The divine mindfulness that and the care, the heavenly care that led gloriously to more than just our exaltation as those made in the image of God. It led first to the execution of Jesus for our cancerous sin, and then to the exaltation of Jesus so that He might heal and restore our creation, all creation. You see, He will bring a new heavens and a new earth, as the Scriptures talk about. That world to come, as the writer of Hebrews 2 was describing it. That world to come. He's doing this that it might be our forever home with Him, where forever and ever we can bask in His mindfulness and care. Does that sound good to you? I hope it does. If it doesn't, you're not connecting to the dots. Right? You're not connecting the dots from your struggle and your hurt over to God's sufficiency and power and love. Ask Him to help you do that. If there's blockage there, ask Him to help you to do that. Take a moment even now to thank God for the ways that He has been and is mindful of us. Take a moment to praise Him in all His immensity for the care that He has shown teeny tiny you, right? He's taken such good care of you. Yes, these things are true when we read the psalm in regard to all humanity in general. But see if you can wrap your head around the fact that they're also true for each of us individually in a profoundly personal way. The same God who set the stars in place wants to have a place in your life, because He loves you. You think that's a preacher's hyperbole, exaggeration? It's not. It's not. He loves you. He knows what you're going through today. He knows what you're facing. I pray that this is a wonderful encouragement to you, and that as you go out tonight or any other night, that all of it's brought back to your heart very powerfully, to see that reminder above you. As we've seen from this morning from David and the son of David, the proof of God's mindfulness is simply staggering. So let's give thanks together to Him for these things. Would you pray with me?